You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In light of new research released this month, the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, has warned that by 2050 the global demand for fresh water is expected to grow by more than 40%, and at least a quarter of the world's population will live in countries with a chronic or recurrent lack of clean water. I spoke to Professor Michael Young of Adelaide University about global water shortages.
Essentially what's happening around the world is populations grow and people move, particularly from rural areas into urban areas, and become wealthier. They all want access to more and more water. And the amount of water around the world is either stable, in quite a few areas has been overused and is being depleted. So whether you're in Africa, the United States where I am at the moment, Australia, or even in New Zealand, more and more people are becoming exposed to water scarcity. And by the middle of this century, it's expected that well over half of the population of the world will be living in an environment where access to water is either scarce or they're going to be very dependent on very expensive desalination as a source.
What countries might be worst affected?
I think that's almost the wrong way to ask the question. Global studies show that we can live within the world's limited water resources, but what we need everywhere are robust sharing schemes. Essentially, when a resource is scarce, whether it be the climate, water or fish, you have to have some sort of sharing scheme where there's a process in place that if somebody wants to use more water and they want a bigger share of the available resource, someone else has to agree to take a lesser share. And once you put those sorts of regimes in place, you drive the efficiencies that are necessary for us all to have access. And so the challenge really everywhere, and the question is not so much which countries are going to be worst off, but which countries have the courage and the discipline to put in place robust water sharing regimes. And that's the solution. I'm here in California at the moment looking at how to share access to groundwater resources, which have been dropping meter by meter every year, and there's serious subsidence occurring. I can show you similar problems in India and even in New Zealand, which has a fairly wet climate. There are parts of New Zealand where now the limits have been reached, sometimes in water quality, but also in water quantity. And as those emerge, the challenge is to move to a sharing regime that forces everybody to plan to look after water resources.
Could this be an international sharing regime in which water is transported from, say, a country with more than enough to a country that doesn't have enough?
No, that will never happen, because water is very, very heavy, and in fact is the cheapest thing per ton that you bring into your house. It comes in via a tap, and it's so heavy and the amounts that are needed, that it's much more efficient to either move the people and also to do things like grow food elsewhere and bring the food to you rather than bring the water to you. You know, you think of a bottle of wine. There are hundreds of bottles of water used. In fact, it's about 300 bottles of water used to make one bottle of wine. It's much easier to go to places where water is abundant, grow the grapes there, convert it into wine, and then bring the wine to New Zealand rather than to bring a truck or a ship to bring the water over, then put it in a truck and then bring it to wherever it's needed. So scarcity means we just have to manage well.
So how is water scarcity and climate change interrelated?
That's actually a really interesting question. Many people get to me or talk to me and are very, very concerned about climate change and water. What that does mean is supplies will change. But on the scale of the changes that are occurring around the world, climate change actually isn't the biggest factor driving changes in demand for water or in where scarcities are moving. Other factors like population change, growing industry, growing wealth and changing demands for water and water-based products are giving much larger shocks than climate change is. Climate change occurs fairly slowly and is easily adjusted for, while variability has to be managed, and changes in variability are important. The real challenge is just to build a system that can cope with working within whatever the limit is and doing well. Australia in the first half of, in the first decade of this century, had a massive drought. In fact, it coped quite well. In fact, the rest of the world has been very impressed with how well Australia coped, because in essence, it had a robust water sharing system in place. If the same drought had happened in New Zealand over a decade or happened in America, it would have been an absolute crisis because the country's structures used to manage water weren't in place and still aren't in place.
Next, I spoke to Guy Salmon, the Executive Director of New Zealand's Ecologic Foundation, and asked him about New Zealand's freshwater resources.
The kind of pattern that we're getting around the world is in a sense exemplified in New Zealand, which is that on western sides of the islands, it's getting wetter with more high intensity rainfall. And on the eastern sides of the islands, it's getting drier and more desert-like, longer droughts in summer. And so if you sort of expand that pattern to the world, the little part which is still kind of moderate and temperate and good for growing food is getting smaller.
So possible food shortages in New Zealand as a consequence?
I don't think we'll have food shortages in terms of feeding our own people, because 90% of the food we grow is exported. So the problem for us, I think, is going to be the long-term future outlook for our economy. And we're facing that dilemma anyway, because the way we grow a lot of our food, or particularly livestock and dairy, is causing a lot of water contamination problems, which, as well as greenhouse gas emissions. So if we're going to reverse those trends, we already face a challenge to diversify our economy. It's something we haven't proved to be very good at so far, but it's certainly the need for diversifying our economy is going to grow over time.
So how might we combat the issue in New Zealand?
Well, there's a role for a number of different strategies here. Obviously, one which the farming community is very keen on is building more water storage so that we can irrigate dry areas. And that's not just important from the farming community's point of view as well. If you're an environmentalist like I am, and you're thinking about how is the country going to manage climate change, there's a key strategy, I think, is to become less dependent on livestock as a means of land use and move more into growing forests on hill country and growing horticultural crops on the easier country, the lowlands. And if you do that, then the first thing that's going to happen is you plant more trees in dry areas, the streams are not going to have so much water coming down them. And secondly, the horticulture crops that you're wanting to grow are going to need reliable water, because if they go through a prolonged drought, the trees just die. So we're going to need some water storage from the point of view of tackling climate change and having our agriculture less dependent on livestock. If you think about livestock, it's kind of an ideal thing to grow if you haven't got reliable summer rainfall. But if you could organise water storage and you could store water during those drought periods, then you could grow horticultural crops. And you know, horticulture has grown by 22% in the last 12 months. So just over the last year, it's been a 22% growth. That's enormous.
So considering the vast amount of water it takes to produce meat, should we instead be moving from meat production into more vegetative?
I think that's the basic idea here. Half our greenhouse gas emissions are coming from livestock production. If we were going to find, there are some things you can do to reduce the emissions from livestock, but even if you do all those things, you still have to reduce our livestock numbers by at least a third by the middle of the century. So that means a combination of forestry and horticulture, and in order for that to make sense, we also have to have water storage.
So do you think the New Zealand government should be doing more to safeguard fresh water resources?
Obviously it should. There's been a big issue recently about swimmability And it's pretty obvious, I think, to everyone now that New Zealanders feel passionate about being able to swim in streams and lakes. And the fact that that ability has been lost in many places over recent years is a pretty tragic story, and something which we've got to turn around. So it's really exciting, I think, to be coming up to an election in which the major parties are finally making an issue of this and promising to do something about it.
What is your stance on the National Party's policy regarding swimmable waters?
I think they've got a rather leisurely approach to the problem. So they're talking about getting 90% of the main freshwater bodies up to a swimmability standard by 2040. And I think the obvious question most people are going to ask is, why couldn't we do it a lot sooner than that? And part of the answer is cost. I mean, there's quite a few small rural towns that aren't going to find it easy to spend money on upgrading their sewage infrastructure. But there ought to be more money available from central government to help those small towns, I think. And with the farming community, you know, I think they're starting to show a willingness to move a bit faster on some of these issues as well. So we need a bit more leadership in this space than we're getting at the moment.
Well, the World Bank forecasts that water availability in cities could decline by as much as 2/3 by 2050. What is the current situation in New Zealand regarding freshwater availability?
We're okay in a lot of places, but you think about Auckland. I mean, this is our fastest growing and biggest city. It's piping water up from the Waikato River. The people who live in the Waikato are pretty nervous about whether they're going to have enough water supplies for irrigating crops and farms in the Waikato when Auckland's growth means that they're going to be wanting to take more water from the Waikato. So we've got some little mini water wars of our own, I think, in New Zealand, which we have to face up to. And down in Canterbury, the city is on this great clear water aquifer. But when you get a little further out into other parts of Canterbury, the levels of nitrate in the groundwater are creeping up to reasonably dangerous levels. And we haven't got a game plan for stopping this trend and turning it round. So I do foresee quite a few problems, not just for the farming community, but for city people as well, looking forward.
So this increase in nitrate levels, is this due to intensification of farming?
Absolutely it is, yep. And especially intensive irrigated dairying, which has become a huge thing in parts of the South Island over the last 20 years. And we sort of rushed into this, and we talked about white gold, you know, from the milk and all this kind of thing. But we didn't, I think, fully understand the implications that it was going to have for our water supplies and our streams. So Canterbury people are pretty upset because a lot of the streams that used to flow all the time are now running very, very low, down to a trickle in summer. The trickle is getting pretty polluted. And, you know, down here in Canterbury, where I'm just visiting this week, there's a lot of people who are pretty upset about this. I think that New Zealand as a whole has to take this issue a lot more seriously. If you look at the combined effect of water contamination and climate change, what it actually is all about is changing the way we earn a livelihood in the world. So for many years, we've relied on livestock farmers to bring in the foreign exchange that we need to buy our smartphones and our cars and everything. We've actually got to find a way of earning a living in the world that isn't so dependent on livestock farming. And that's the challenge in front of us. I think we're right up for that. I think we can change the structure of the economy, but we shouldn't have any illusions that we can just kind of patch up the existing farming system and carry on. We actually have to think about some major changes of land use, and we have to think about the kinds of new export industries that we could generate based in our cities that are not going to create water pollution and are not going to create greenhouse gas emissions. If you look at the rise of software export businesses like Xero, you're looking at the way of the future, I think, and it's an exciting thing, but somehow we have to stimulate more of it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.